homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So we've been watching here, we've been watching a series called Troy, Fall of a City, which is about the Trojan War. And we just finished it yesterday evening. And it got me to thinking about how karma occurs and how it is viewed when it isn't understood. When it isn't understood, it can be thought of as destiny or God, or God's controlling things. But what the Trojan War and the story of it actually illustrates is how this and these viewpoints work and manifest themselves in the way people conduct their lives. Something is set in motion, and people feel trapped, and that there is no choice in the matter. Whether people, in this case, the people in the Trojan War, fear loss of honor, or of people, or of situation. One can see that always there is a choice. In the Greek stories, prophecy plays a large part, including in the Trojan War, the prophecies of Cassandra, who was cursed with the ability to be completely accurate about the direction the future would take, and at the same time, nobody would believe her. The pattern that karma takes, including in this story of the Trojan War, can be seen, and where it will likely lead, and that it is that, and that being able to tell where it will likely lead is what the Greeks called prophecy. The Delphic Oracle, which everybody consulted in the ancient Greek world for maybe as much as 3,000 years, people would go to consult the Oracle at Delphi. In the modern world, what the Oracle would say is called cryptic. And it's become a byword for giving advice which can be taken any number of ways. But, in fact, all that was given, in the case of the Delphic Oracle and the prophecies of Cassandra, was saying that if you continue in this particular direction, this is what will happen. The fact that people then interpreted this in all sorts of different ways was not the fault, as it were, of the woman who was the oracle. She simply, as it were, called it as she saw it. A famous example of this is, I think it was King Midas sent a messenger to the oracle, and he wanted to test her. So he arranged that the question be asked at a particular time of day, and he made sure he was doing a particular thing at exactly that time of day. And so when the messenger approached the temple, even before he got the question out, which was, what is the king doing at this particular moment? She said, on my senses comes the smell of lamb cooking and turtle. Brass is the vessel above and brass the vessel below, which was precisely what the king was doing, and therefore the king sent another messenger to ask her a question regarding prophecy. And you note that the question, the first question and answer, has nothing to do with prophecy. It just has to do with having a strongly developed intuitive sense. So the question that he sent to her was, if I cross this river that is the boundary of my country, what will happen? He meant, as it would have been understood, that if he crossed the boundary, he was actually invading the other country. And she replied, if you cross the river, a great empire will fall. Now, he crossed the river and was defeated, and his empire fell. But he thought it was interpreting it as the other empire. And if you can see from this, it was not the fault of the oracle that she was simply stating consequences that fall from actions. The fact that the person decided to interpret it in the most selfish way possible led to catastrophe for them. Because the option was always not to cross the river at all. In the Trojan War story, there is a continual series of people trapped by their circumstances. It's actually very interesting to read or to watch, if it's done well. Continuously trapped by their circumstances. The lesson they draw from it is the inability to escape their destiny, which the gods have already set up. And yet, what is going on is the continual choice of selfishness, even though that sounds like a very harsh term, but selfishness in the Buddhist sense of self-absorption. The choice of selfishness over trying to do that which is good to do. This was not the case of everybody in the story. As a matter of fact, the people acting out of selfishness managed to destroy life for pretty much everybody else. But the people concerned always thought that they had no choice And that was because they were not willing to consider choices that...
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. You okay?
Yes, I just have a spider.
Oh. They see themselves as having no choice, primarily because they do not consider the validity of choices that will be painful, even though the choices that they actually do make are extremely painful. It is the nature of self that it is not an accurate judge of causes and conditions and what flows out of karma. Or I should say, not simply self, but self-interest. However, I am not saying that these things, of course, that these things were not easy ways out of the circumstances. There is that Chinese saying about karma that it is very difficult to dismount from a tiger. The saying does not say how you got on top of the tiger's back in the first place. It just reminds you that it is very difficult to get down once you are on top. But to make choices of trying to do the best thing then, given that we are and cannot necessarily see clearly, we are at least able to say we did the best we could. Now, a number of people who are listening are aware from their own experience that once the wheel is set in motion, then you set it in motion for another person as well. And whereas one can recall or call back one's own actions and deal with them, what one has set going in another person, one can in fact not call back. Because one cannot control the consequences for another person, however far-reaching they become. And to a degree, because one has set it in motion, it will come back around and hit one, maybe months, maybe years away. Because one has set it in motion for the other person. Now, I spoke of this a few years ago, actually, about people who set in motion, people in governments who set in motion karma for other people, and then thinking that they'll be able to control it to their will, but in fact end up unleashing things beyond, quite beyond their control. And of course, we've had several spectacular examples over the last few years of people setting in motion things that, particularly in other countries, that they think they're going to be able to control. And they're doing it actually in order to have control. But having set things in motion for other people, they cannot tell what direction that will take. And then, of course, it has come back and hit them. Reverend Master Jiu used to say about Buddhism being a religion for spiritual adults, precisely for this reason. There is another example in a book called The Return of Lady Brace by Nancy Wilson Ross, I believe, that is a very curious book because it illustrates an important principle of Buddhism within a Western context, which very few books do. And it shows how somebody making a choice that is trying to do the very best thing possible does not always or even generally follow conventional patterns. That is why it is said to do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world. And although I won't go into the whole story, but a woman ends up, she's not Buddhist per se, although she becomes influenced by the teachings of a particular monk. She's asked to make a choice that involves various types of ideas of conventional behavior, of what other people think or do not think. And she ends up making a choice to support her daughter. As I say, even though it is quite unconventional and to some degree goes against her own mores, her own upbringing. But it is an excellent example of how one goes about making such a decision. And several of the points within it, which I would say are important, is the remembering that one is dealing with people. Reverend Master Jiu was so much regarding this. People before principles. I remember, as I think I've told people before, of a monk whose back went out so severely that they were sent to one of the priories to stay. And because their back had gone out so severely, they spent a lot of time flat on their back. And the person in charge of that particular temple felt that this didn't set a good example to the laity, and so called Reverend Master Jiu and said, you know, this is not giving the right image to the lay people. Because, you know, the monk is flat on their back and not really doing anything at all. And Reverend Master Jiu did one of her rare, if I can call it, yellings. Because sometimes one has to express it strongly, because otherwise the person won't listen. On this very thing, she said, one's fellow monk is not an image. And so, the same thing with this story of Lady Brace. There were the questions of what will other people think, etc., etc. And so, as I say, one of the principles involved was, we are dealing with people individual people who carry karma. And then one of the second principles is everything, including the people, is subject to change. So in making a decision, to beware of the motivation to control the future. If you understand what I mean, where the motivation in doing a particular thing is to control the future, as if the various people concerned were not capable of change. A third principle, or another principle, is that whichever way, once karma is set in motion, whichever way you turn, you're liable to get pricked by it. And I guess the fourth and the next principle is, what is the goal of what one is doing? These are the same as what are called the four seals in Buddhism: anicca, anatta, dukkha, nirvana. Everything changes. There's too strong a tendency for people to think of these as sort of abstract principles or teachings applying to the world, you know, everything changes, without applying them to oneself and other people. Anicca, everything changes, the circumstances change. The people change. Yourself changes. Anatta, that acting out of selfishness has no benefit. As Dogen says, people think that they thereby benefit themselves, but in fact they do not. They only create suffering for themselves. Dukkha, suffering, whichever way, once the karma is set in motion, whichever way one moves, one is bound to get pricked by it. And then nirvana, the fourth of the four seals, what is our motivation in doing this? River Master used to talk about in the motivation, which is talked about in the wedding ceremony, of making everybody successful in their own way. There is another program, which we've watched before, on the Medici, the Italian banking family, which illustrates how one does lay training. Even though, of course, as I said, the people are not Buddhist. But it shows how lay training is done and how to try to do the very best thing bewilders the dickens out of malicious people. Because people who act out of selfishness and maliciousness do not understand how somebody could not act out of it. And so they become confused. But it also shows that setting in motion the wheel of karma for others ends in severe consequences that come back to haunt one. Her Master Ji used to say, sometimes the best Buddhist teaching can be found in books or films that have no actual, quote-unquote, connection with Buddhism. That is, with explicitly Buddhist teachings. The Buddha was trying to get across, when he was teaching, how things work. Not how do we want them to work, not how God planned them to work, but how they actually work, and how we can, to the best of our ability, navigate this world, if I can put it that way, and be of genuine benefit to it. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.